The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew today, taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Friday, the Supreme Court ruled in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health that the Roe v. Wade decision was incorrect. It was constitutionally deficient, and threw it out along with Doe and Casey, returning the issue to the state legislatures, to the people, possibly to Congress, but at any rate to the electoral branches of government rather than the judiciary. Now that leaves a lot of people in flux, and certainly that is something that when you have this dramatic of a change in something that had been, you know, a fair constant for most of our lives, for some people for all of their lives, even if it's the wrong decision, even if you celebrate the fact that it's over, as we all do, it still leaves a lot of people in different places with a struggle to figure out where to go next, including some of us who were, you know, in the pro-life movement. We talked about this on Tuesday with my friend Dustin Siggins, is where do we go now? What happens now? You've won. What do you do now? Well, there's a lot to do now. And in fact, there's probably more to do now than there may have been before. And our next guest is going to tell us a little bit about that. At 19 years old, Andy Pearson had an abortion. Despite all the rhetoric that this was going to be an instant cure for a very difficult situation, she ended up going into a tailspin in her life. Drugs, alcohol, promiscuity, two more abortions. It was a return to her Catholic faith and going through post-abortion healing programs that brought her the peace she desperately wanted. It also prompted her to found a program called Her Plan, which stands for Her Pregnancy and Life Assistance Network, that provides a well-rounded approach to caring for women in crisis pregnancy situations and post-abortion counseling. And that is online. You can find that at herplan.org. And Andy, thank you so much for being with us today to talk a little bit about your story and talk a little bit about what does come next.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me. And you're right. Now is the time to actually step up to service, even if it involves a little bit of sacrifice. And just imagine, you know, what we can do.
These are things, of course, that when you were 19 years old and going through all these struggles in your life, I mean, just simply that the situation you were in must have been very difficult to see whether or not there were even any of these types of options available. I'm not sure if there were, frankly, wherever you happened to be and when you were going through all these struggles in your life. And this is part of this panic and despair that can set in for young women who are finding themselves with pregnancies that they hadn't planned on. And it's very easy when you're in that situation to look for the easy way out.
Oh, exactly. I mean, I was about 18, 19 when I became pregnant. And yes, I was scared. I was confused, not sure about my future. And I ended up going to Planned Parenthood I actually just went to seek advice. And I was manipulated into thinking that abortion was my only option and that I had to take the life of my child to be successful, to be happy. This child was going to be a burden on my life and on my family. At that point, you know, at that time, I didn't know about any, you know, the pregnancy care centers and the maternity homes that did stand ready to assist, like, women in my own situation. And had I known about these organizations and their work to empower women to choose life, my sons and daughters, you know, would be alive today.
Yeah, and that is a very difficult reality to grasp. And again, I just want to really thank you again for your courage for speaking about this, because this can't be an easy topic, and I know that you are working hard at this, so I know that this is something that you cover a lot, but there's still a cost to going through this and to going over this story with other people. And and so I just wanted to make sure that we recognize that.
Yes. Well, I mean, the live abortion, you know, is the only option for women facing unexpected pregnancies. Couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, after my abortion, you know, I lost my child and a piece of myself, you know, that first one. And, you know, I died on that table the same day as, you know, my child, my first child died. I became a very uncaring person, cold, sunk into deep depression where, you know, drugs and alcohol covered all those feelings, and a promiscuous lifestyle to feel, you know, cared about again, you know. And during that vicious cycle, you know, I would have two more abortions. You know, it left me feeling empty and depressed and alone. And, but, you know, I went into a church, I think at the lowest point of my life when I was contemplating suicide, and prayed and asked God, you know, please help me. And at that moment, a priest walked in, and by the grace of God, you know, I got the courage to go over and speak to him. And that was the beginning of my journey out of this darkness that I was stuck in.
Right.
And my journey into the healing.
And, I mean, at that point, hopefully you were put in touch with people, with some support organizations who could walk with you on that journey, because they do exist. They may not be they may not be easy to find depending on where you happen to be and, you know, where you land, but they're out there and they do exist. Were you able to find that kind of support organization at that time?
Yes, he became my spiritual director. He led me on that path. I eventually ended up at a Rachel's Vineyard, and my experience with abortion healing ministries and life affirming support organizations, you know, they helped me find the healing, and they left me feeling truly empowered, loved, and supported as a woman.
And I mean, this is the core of our faith is love and mercy, right? And mm-hmm. being God's instruments in that to our brothers and sisters. And so, yeah, I mean, it's an inspiring story in its way. Even though we're certainly cognizant of all the suffering, we're speaking with Andy Pearson from herplan.org, and I'm going to mention that several times during mm-hmm. this, herplan.org, because this is where you can go. We're going to talk extensively about this. We're also taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. And, you know, one of the reasons why I want to talk about these organizations, and certainly, you know, you're part of that now, you're mm-hmm. on the front lines of this, is in the aftermath of the Dobbs decision, even really in the aftermath of the leak, right? Because we pretty much knew where this was going on May 3rd, because mm-hmm. the draft opinion was leaked. We all understood that once it was confirmed that was it was an authentic document, it was pretty clear where the court was going to go with this. And of course, we've had a lot of debate about this, and I don't mind debate. Debate's fine. There's been a lot of castigation, though, of the very organizations that people of faith have built to help women in this situation. I mean, mm-hmm. not just from Twitter randos, right? You can always find a Twitter rando. You know, there's not even any sport in finding a Twitter rando. But Andy, I mean, we're talking about from people like, you know, Senator Elizabeth Warren, who's calling these mm-hmm. you know, these pregnancy support centers dangerous. They don't know what they're doing. You know, they're trying to hoodwink women. I mean, that type of thing is really, I mean, it really has to, it probably fires you up, but I mean, but it also has to worry you, because it is going to scare people off who might otherwise be helped by these organizations.
Yeah. Well, you know, unlike the pro-abortion lobby, the pro-life movement didn't abandon me. You know, the abortion industry abandoned me. And, the pro-life movement they came alongside me after my abortions to offer support and help me heal. And that's why today I work to connect life-affirming organizations offering that same support to other women in need, but not only in, you know, for a woman who's had an abortion, but also, you know, to aid and connect organizations offering life-affirming support to pregnant and parenting women in need. You know, organizations that I wish I would have known existed, you know, years ago.
Right.
You know, I do this work so women facing situations like my own will know that they deserve better than abortion, and that there is and there are life-affirming organizations that are standing ready to support them. Her plan encompasses 7 categories of care, ranging from mentorship, pregnancy help and case management, to financial assistance, work or education and recovery, mental health. The organizations within this community are here to support pregnant and parenting women in need. And we are walking with them through whatever circumstances they may be facing. We're not going to abandon them. We are going to be there for them. We're going to be there with them.
And again, that is something that you kind of hear that sort of message of solidarity from the pro-choice mm-hmm. crowd, right? But when the rubber meets the road, they're gone. When they're needed, they're gone. Once the abortion is over, that's the end of it.
Absolutely. You know, in fact, after my first abortion, you know, I sat in this room, in this recovery room, where nobody came around to see if we were okay. There were several women in there moaning. Some were crying. But nobody checked on us. Nobody offered any comfort, nothing. The only interaction we had was when it was time for me to be dismissed. They then handed me a piece of paper and said, if you have any problems, contact your physician. And that was the extent of it. And I actually did end up having complications shortly after. I did develop a fever. And my mother, not knowing what happened, what I did,
yeah.
Took me to the emergency room, and I was actually admitted in the hospital for an infection in which I had to have IV antibiotics administered. And so that wasn't a very great way of her finding out her grandchild, you know, just, you know, is gone.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, they Planned Parenthood, the abortion industry, once they're done, they're done. And then when I did become a voice, you know, speaking about the negative effects of abortion, they wanted me to be quiet. They wanted
right.
to hush me up. You know, don't talk about this. And, you know, a woman has a right. She deserves to know the truth.
So let me ask you, we're going to get to herplan.org. And again, this is, you know, Andy's work is at herplan.org. And we're going to get to that in just a moment. But I do want to ask you, I mean, you've certainly been working on this in the last few days and really the last few weeks since the leak of the Alito draft, again, that we were talking mm-hmm. about in Dobbs. When you are working with women, have you noticed a mm-hmm. difference? Have you heard a difference? Has it made a difference in your ministry, in your outreach to them and their outreach to you?
Well, we reach out to, with her plan, we reach out to, you know, life-affirming providers.
Yes, I'm sorry. That's
to go ahead
yeah.
and get them together. Yes. We have beautiful reception of that, and everybody's really ready to help these women. I also have worked as a support staff on healing retreats, and there are hundreds, I can even say thousands, of women that are walking around out there that have been so negatively affected by abortion, and it's just devastating to sit and listen and hear, you know, their stories. And so that's why, you know, I am just adamant about her plan and, you know, putting together this directory so that women can get the assistance that they need. And whether it be if she had an abortion, we, you know, we can connect you with a recovery program for you.
So let's talk about Her Planet, herplan.org, and what it is that you do, and that connection that you make. Because, again, and I think this goes back to, you know, when you were feeling alone and lost at the time of that that first pregnancy, the first abortion, is that it was difficult to find out where you could go. And I think that that's the experience that people have, you know, that women have to this day who are in this position, is that they feel the world collapsing around them and they don't think that there's any place that they can go. They hear all this nonsense in the media about, you know, about outreach efforts like yours and the people that you work with, more specifically, actually, and how they're not to be trusted. So it's important to have somebody who has sort of pre-vetted some of these things and can connect people up to good outreach, to good places for outreach. And that's what herplan.org does. So tell us a little bit the seven categories of care and what a woman who would be coming to this, how she would use herplan.org. And there's no such thing as a typical case, but in any kind of case, and in sort of a generalized case.
Yeah. Well, there's seven categories. Like I said, there's mentorship, which is the pregnancy help and case management, like your pregnancy health centers. And there's health and well-being. So maybe a woman needs to be, excuse me, connected with, an OB doctor, pro-life, OB doctor that would help her. There's support for services for women in breastfeeding, general health services, dental needs. There's a category of financial assistance, worker education, helping her get that financial aid, maybe work opportunities or training in a job, education opportunities. There is material or legal support. Maybe she needs transportation to get back and forth to visit her doctor, food and nutrition. There's food pantries that, that are connected, that she can get the food and nutrition for her family.
Right.
Clothing, household goods, housing, shelters, and legal support. There's the category of recovery and mental health, where addiction or suicide intervention. She may have an intimate partner who's violent, sexual assault, or even sex trafficking, counseling for women and families, and also, like I said, abortion recovery and healing. There is prenatal diagnosis, a disability support organization, medical interventions for the baby, prenatal hospice resources, pregnancy and infant loss. And then we have child care. They might need help in childcare, a children's health care service, family and parenting education, adoption services, foster and short-term care. So these are all the things in our seven categories that she can, find assistance. Whether she goes to, a pregnancy center that's online, on our map, and they can connect her. It's all interwebbed together. So that's our goal too, is to connect all these providers together so we can work together.
We are speaking with Andy Pearson of herplan.org, herplan.org, taking your calls at 888-914-9149. And the reason why I wanted you to walk through all of that, first off, is because we really want to make sure that people know that this is out there. But I also wanted to sort of substantially address or rebut some of the criticisms that we're hearing from Senator Elizabeth Warren and some of the other politicians about this, about how, they're just trying to convince you not to have an abortion, and they don't offer anything else. There's nothing else. They're just trying to sucker women into these clinics so that they can just berate them about abortions. I mean, that's clearly not what's going on here. There is a comprehensive level of support that you can find when you go to herplan.org, and that's clearly also with any of the people that you're affiliating with and that you are able to refer to in your network, these people know about you. You know about them,
mm-hmm.
and there's all sorts of connections that can be made for the well-being of the woman and the child.
Yes, life-affirming organizations, are supporting pregnant and parenting women in need each day, offering them hope and support. I can't emphasize that hope and support, enough. But these organizations stand ready to continue this vital life-affirming work, empowering women to choose life and walking alongside them every step of the way, even years down the road. I mean, this is, her plan is just going to grow.
Right.
And we're very excited to have this. And I'm just thrilled to be a part of her plan and be able to help these women. And I think about, my children that are here on earth now and my grandchildren and, their children, we're going to be here for a long time.
That's right. Now, one of the really interesting aspects about this is that if you're a church and you mm-hmm. are interested in preparing to be part of this Pathways to Life, and there's National Pathways to Life, and then there's some separate organizations in a few states: Georgia, Mississippi, Virginia, West Virginia. But there's a church pro-life assessment that you can take, on behalf of your church community, just so that you can see how well prepared you are for when pregnant women come for assistance. And I think that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. If you can tell us just a little bit about the church pro-life assessment and Jill Stanek's work with you. I mean, Jill Stanek's pretty much legendary in the pro-life movement.
Yes, and she does all the pathways. And it's designed for, women and families that they're best served when communities and providers strongly support one another's work. And, communities benefit from knowing where to find help for themselves and others. Some churches also offer different services that they can, connect with these women. They might have a food pantry. They might.
Sure.
They might have an abortion recovery healing program, and to be able to get the churches involved and connected is vital as well.
It's almost like a gift inventory, right? The inventory of your spiritual gifts. It's
absolutely.
I mean, this is like doing this for your church. And so this is a mm-hmm. great way for churches to get involved with herplan.org. And the whole platform here is a beautiful, comprehensive approach to putting pro-life into action. Not that it hasn't been in action yeah. before; it's been in action for 50 plus years. But mm-hmm. now that we've achieved the goal of getting this out of the judiciary, one of the things that we're going to have to do is make sure that we're on the ground for women who really need that. And Andy Pearson, I just want to thank you again yeah. so much for being here to talk to us about just how
thank
important
you.
That is.
Yes, thank you so much.
Well, Andy Pearson is at herplan.org. Go to herplan.org, take a look at the website, see if there's some way that you can help, and see if you can get your church involved as well. When we come back, we're going to be talking about common misconceptions about abortion. So stay tuned for that. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Drew. We'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's 30 minutes past the hour. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew, talking about abortions, talking about the pro-life cause, talking about all sorts of different misconceptions. We're going to continue that conversation this half hour. Before we go on to that, though, Cale Clark Show comes up at the top of the hour. His topic today, a prominent Catholic blogger becomes agnostic and offers an object lesson in how not to bring someone back to the church. That's going to be an amazing topic. So be sure to stay tuned for the Gale Clark Show, the top of the hour, 5 p.m. Central. So, yeah, that's well, there's many ways not to bring somebody back to the church. I'm curious as to which particular way Gale is going to highlight. That's going to be a great show. So stay tuned for that. But getting back to the topic of this hour, which is the resources and the misconceptions and everything else that's going on that's in the pro-life movement and in reference to abortion, pleased to introduce Dr. Ingrid Skop. She's a board-certified OBGYN who serves as a senior fellow and director of medical affairs at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, which you can find at lozierinstitute.org. That's L-O-Z-I-E-R, institute.org. Prior to joining Lozier, Dr. Skop served for over 25 years in private practice in San Antonio, where she delivered more than 5,000 babies and personally cared for many women who had been harmed physically and emotionally from complications due to abortion. She continues to serve as medical director of Any Woman Can, a pregnancy resource center that provides support and free counseling to women in crisis. She's also the medical director and board member of The Source in Austin and Houston, a consortium of full-service women's centers with a Christian worldview. Dr. Skop, thank you so much for spending some time with us this afternoon.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
You know, I was just talking with Andy Pearson, who runs HerPlan.org, which is a it's an organization that just connects women in crisis to all sorts of different resources, right? It's a great idea. It's a great way to put the pro-life movement into sort of a practical form for women who are who really need assistance, really need just people to walk with them in this difficult journey. What they don't really need is a lot of misconceptions about these types of resource centers, pregnancy resource centers. And I was talking to Andy about this too, Dr. Skop, and saying, you know, you've got politicians. It's not just randos on Twitter. You got politicians saying, oh, these resource centers are terrible. Oh, they just have misinformation. They're there to mislead women. They're there to, you know, to lecture women and scold women and shame women. I mean, nothing could be further from the truth. That's certainly one of the myths that we have to really explode here, because it's one that's being propagated at full volume over the last few days.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the reality is the abortion movement is losing. People don't agree with what they're doing, and we want to help women. And I think the resources, the 2,700 crisis pregnancy centers in our country, what her plan is trying to do is just connect people to resources in their community. And that's how the pro-life movement is going to show that we're going to care for them and we're right. Like you say, there is quite a bit of misinformation, and I think much of it is intentional. I think that, again, if they can turn the average American against pro-life legislation because of concern for women, then they don't have to go back and talk about what they're really doing, and that's destroying the children. You know, we'll talk some more, but we don't have to decide between a woman and her child. We can protect and care for them both.
We certainly can, and we've been doing it for decades, by the way. I mean, mm-hmm. this is not new.
Right.
These crisis centers didn't just open up on Friday afternoon after the Supreme Court released this decision. They've been operating for years, for decades, and they've been doing very good work. And frankly, I'm not sure, other than just as a way to try to defend the abortion industry, I'm not sure why even a pro-choice politician would object to them. I mean, the whole point here, or at least as they say, the whole point here is women's health. It's to provide women with a choice. And if they choose to keep the baby, even though they're in crisis, wouldn't we want support centers to be out there to help them through that choice? Because certainly Planned Parenthood isn't set up to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, women are hormonally designed by their creator to bond with their child. And they do this long before birth. And we know that pregnancy centers tell us that most women say they would be willing to carry and give birth to their baby if they just had support, if they had material support, and mostly if they had the support of the father of the baby. And
right.
So not only do these centers provide material support, but in many cases they provide relationship counseling, fatherhood classes. That's the full picture. That's how we care for women and families.
So let's go through some of the misconceptions, the myths, the lies, I guess we could probably, I think we can use that word, right, Dr. Scott, in some cases, right?
I think some of them are clearly lies.
Yes. Let's go through some of the common ones about abortion, and I'll let you guide this, because I would like to hear what you think are the misconceptions that need to be addressed first and most.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm an OB-GYN in Texas, and I've practiced here for 30 years. And, of course, we were ahead of the curve. We were able to implement an abortion restriction last September, which
right.
has been wonderful. But even here, the newspapers carry scare stories about women who don't get treatment for ectopics and women who can't have their miscarriages treated. And the very first thing they needed to do was read the Texas law, which specifically exempts ectopic pregnancies. And it specifically says that if an abortion is needed for life of the mother, that it can be performed. But I'll tell you, I'll start with ectopic pregnancies. That's a pregnancy that is not implanted in the uterus.
Right.
And it does not have the ability to develop to a live birth. It just can't. It will die at some point, but in the meantime, it may stretch open the woman's fallopian tube and cause catastrophic bleeding, and it counts for about 10% of maternal deaths. So it's a scary situation, and there is no obstetrician, pro-life, or pro-choice in this country that will not treat that situation when they diagnose it. In fact, even Planned Parenthood on their website says that an ectopic pregnancy is not the same as an abortion.
Right.
So that the intent is different, the treatment is different, there is no similarity to an abortion. And sadly, in that situation, the pregnancy needs to be resolved so that the woman's life does not become endangered.
So I want to be clear on this, because it's not just Texas, right? I mean, that's really, even prior to Roe, I mean, it was never illegal to end
right.
an ectopic pregnancy. And
right.
as far as I know, none of those laws were changed even after Roe. First off, because it didn't need to be. But secondly, because there is literally no call for nobody is saying, well, you have to carry an ectopic pregnancy to
right.
term. Because, I mean, it's an absurd argument. But I am telling you, I don't think I go 2 hours in a day since Friday without hearing, reading, or seeing something about, well, ectopic pregnancies. I mean, it's amazing. This is, in no state was anyone prevented from dealing with an ectopic pregnancy before, during, or after Roe.
That is correct. It has never been controversial. And if the journalists were willing to do their homework and read the laws and ask questions, they would discover that that this is really a non-issue.
So next, after that, what's the next biggest misconception, mythology about abortion that we really need to address, especially in the current environment?
Yeah, I think along with the ectopic pregnancy, we're also hearing this misinformation about doctors can't treat miscarriages. And a miscarriage, sadly, is a pregnancy that has died, a fetus that has
right.
died. And although the techniques are often the same, the medications and the surgical techniques to do an early abortion and to do a miscarriage management, but the intent is clearly different. One removes a pregnancy that has died. The other intends to kill the pregnancy. So again, there really should be no drama about that. Doctors can and will continue to treat miscarriages the same way that they always have. Later in pregnancy, it doesn't happen very often, but there can be situations, usually toward the middle part of the pregnancy, that a situation arises that threatens the woman's life. A very common situation, or not common at that stage in pregnancy, but common later in pregnancy, is a condition called preeclampsia, where the
yes.
blood pressure is very high. Another situation that can happen in the middle part of pregnancy is if a woman's amniotic membrane ruptures prematurely, what we call preterm, premature, previable rupture of membranes. When that happens, it's almost always associated with a subclinical infection. So we may not see it yet, but we know that the reason that that amniotic membrane ruptured is because the woman's developing an infection. If it's left and not treated, it can progress to sepsis, and women have died from that. But we, all obstetricians, realize this. So in the situation where it happens, particularly if we see a woman showing signs that she is progressing to an infection, sadly, that's a situation where we do need to separate the mother from the fetus. But that is not an abortion. That is a medically indicated delivery or a medically indicated separation. And it can be done in an obstetrically standard way. We can induce the labor. In some situations, perhaps we need to do a C-section. But we're going to give the mother a chance by treating her condition, and we're going to give the baby a chance by delivering him and seeing if he can be saved. In our country, with our excellent neonatology care, many times a baby at 22 weeks gestation, that's a little over halfway through a pregnancy, can be saved. And so we deliver a baby, we let the neonatology team see if they can save him. If they can't, if he's too young to survive, at least his family can be with him. They can hold him. They can say goodbye to him. We can get perinatal hospice involved that'll make sure that he's not in pain, that can support the family. That is the caring way to treat this horrible situation. Doing a D&E dismemberment abortion is a destructive procedure. It's not necessary. It only can make the situation worse. It only can harm the woman and the family more emotionally to go through that. So that, you know, the argument for an abortion in the middle part of pregnancy, again, is unnecessary. In 30 years of practicing, I've never had to do that procedure. I've never had to do an abortion in order to save the mother. I just separate the mother. I separate her from the fetus, and then we see what happens after that.
And again, we're speaking with Dr. Ingrid Skop, taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. We're going to get to some calls, I think, probably after the break. But, I mean, while we're on that topic, you're talking about in the middle of the pregnancy, the second trimester is what you're talking about. Is there any reason why there would be a need for a third trimester abortion in terms of saving the life of the mother?
I have never seen a need for a third trimester abortion. Again, that baby is going to be readily available or readily able to live outside of the uterus with some help, perhaps. And I have never seen the need to intentionally kill the baby, which, of course, is the intent of an abortion in order to separate a mother and her fetus.
Let's go to the phones. Before we take a break, I want to talk to Rosa in Brooklyn, New York. Rosa, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. When I was pregnant with my baby girl, it was second trimester. I had preeclampsia, I think you called it, and I was toxic. My legs were blowing up. I mean, I couldn't even put my shoes on to go home. And my baby girl was born perfect. My doctor did not give me anything at all. He was very old-fashioned doctor. He said, don't worry, everything is okay. He gave me hardly any medicine at all. He just made me go back the next day, okay, right away when he saw that. And that was it. Taking my blood pressure was high. I was a mess. I was a total mess. But I was so calm because of my doctor. He was a very old-fashioned Italian doctor. And my baby girl is perfect, and she's gorgeous.
That's wonderful. I'm glad she's doing so well. And that makes a very good point. We trust our doctors to do what's best for us. And a lot of people don't realize this. Very few obstetricians will perform an abortion. So we, as a group, we do want to care for women. We do consider the fetus to be our patient, and we have a responsibility to the fetus as well as to the mother.
Well, indeed. And again, we're talking with Dr. Ingrid Scott. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about one myth in particular, which is that abortion doesn't do anything to harm a woman and it has no impact on her at all. That, I think, is a huge myth, but I'm sure that Dr. Ingrid Scott is going to have more that she wants to discuss with us, so stay tuned. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Drew Mariani. We'll be right back.
We go there. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
You know, we receive over 1 million prayer requests every year, thanks in part to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line, helping us stay connected to your intentions. Learn how our sponsor could support your family with life insurance at relevantradio.com/Forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's 49 minutes past the hour. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com. Filling in for Drew today, and we are talking with Dr. Ingrid Scott, board-certified OBGYN who serves as Senior Fellow and Director of Medical Affairs at the Charlotte Lozier Institute. Well, you can find it at lozierinstitute.org. That's L-O-Z-I-E-R, institute.org. And she's also the Medical Director of Any Women Can, a pregnancy resource center that provides support and free counseling to women in crisis. And Dr. Scott, is there a URL, a website for Any Women Can?
I believe it's anywomencansa, as in San Antonio, .com.
Anywomencansa.com. That's where you can find that. And Dr. Scott, first off, it's a real pleasure to talk to you about these issues and to sort of explode some of these myths. And I think the biggest one of all is that abortion has no lasting impact on a woman, physically or psychologically, right? I mean, we hear this an awful lot. Oh, well, you know, the only psychological impact this has is from shaming, and that abortion is just removing a clump of cells. It has no moral or physical difference than removing a benign tumor, that type of thing. You hear this argument an awful lot. We're certainly hearing it in the last few days about, you know, how and I think the correlated myth, if you'll allow me to double up, Dr. Scott, I think the correlating myth is that, well, you know, pregnancy is 16 times more dangerous or 14 times more dangerous, you know, than abortion is. I keep hearing different multipliers on this. I mean, both of these things are nonsense, right?
They are nonsense. And I think to start with, to let your listeners know that our country does not mandate any federal data about abortion. We don't know how many abortions occur, at what gestational ages, we don't know how many complications occur, and we don't know how many women die as a result of their abortion. And that's exactly the way they want it to be. Maybe sometimes complications and deaths get reported, the CDC analyzes what comes to their attention, but they do not proactively seek to find what is happening. Back in 1973, part of the impetus for the Roe v. Wade decision was the thought that that women would suffer mental health consequences from carrying unwanted children to term. Well, in my experience, what happens is it may start out as an unwanted or an unplanned pregnancy, but by the time that child reaches term, that is generally a loved member of the family, if the child has not been lost to abortion in the meantime. And in all of those years, there has never, ever been a study that has shown emotional health benefit for a woman from abortion. So the best thing that abortion advocates can say is, we don't think it hurts anybody mentally. But they do this, again, the data's poor. We don't really know what we're measuring.
Right.
And they do this with bias studies. There's been one that's been widely promoted that your listeners may have heard of called the Turnaway Study. And just very briefly, that study was created by a very pro-abortion group out of University of California, San Francisco. They had over 100,000 women to choose from. They focused in on a group of about 3,500 women that they asked to participate in a study. only about 1,000 were willing to participate. And of those, at the end of 5 years, only 500 were still in the study. So you can see that they probably focused on the women that they thought were likely not to suffer from the abortion. They saw how these women responded to the abortion procedure, right? If they were torn up and tearful, they probably weren't going to approach them. But even so, they didn't really prove anything. They just didn't prove that they saw harm. But study after study after study has shown us that there are subgroups of women who are likely to suffer tremendously from their abortion. A woman who desires her pregnancy. Many women are coerced into abortion. A woman who is a teenager, perhaps has a poor self-image, desires to become a mother. Women who have later abortions, women who have multiple abortions, women who have abortions who had the abortion because they were told they needed it to save their life, or they were told that their child would be abnormal or would die at birth. Those women also suffer disproportionately from their abortions. Going to your question about whether abortion is 14 times safer or 16 times safer than childbirth, again, that is based on such poor quality data. And in fact, the denominators were not even the same. So that was a study performed for propaganda purposes only. But I'll tell you, there are many ways that abortion can hurt a woman. Again, we, in addition to not collecting mandatory data, we don't really supervise abortion providers very well. Right. I think everybody's heard of Kermit Gosnell and how he actively harmed women. You can read stories about abortionists throughout our country. In fact, just recently I read one about a Pensacola abortionist in Florida that are harming women in horrendous ways and then trying to hide their complications. Right. And so that does happen. I'm not saying everybody who does abortions is that bad, but I'm just saying there are providers out there, and many times our state health departments and the people who should be supervising them are not. So women can be harmed by direct complications. There's compelling data that sometimes they have a baby prematurely in their next pregnancy because of the damage to the cervix from the abortion. There's also compelling data that maybe they have an abnormal placental attachment in their next pregnancy from surgical damage of the abortion that can cause the placenta to separate, an abruption, which can be catastrophic for a mom and a baby. Or they can have a placenta that attaches too tightly that can't be separated, and those women can have severe hemorrhage at the time of delivery. So emotionally, physically, there is a lot of data that women do get harmed by abortion. And I'll tell you, in my work with the pregnancy centers, women come in and they need emotional health counseling. And they say the anxiety, the depression, the substance abuse, the self-harm that I'm experiencing are because of my abortion. And I trust a woman when she tells me what the cause of her mental health problem is. So right. There's a lot of women who feel they've been harmed by their abortion. There's a lot of women who feel they were not adequately counseled. And to tell you the truth, I think many times those symptoms, those effects magnify through the years. There may be immediate relief. The crisis is over. This thing is behind me. But as women get older and as they have children and they recognize how wonderful their children are, many times the regret and the grief that associated with the abortion continue to increase.
And Dr. Scott, one last thing from me, and then we've got maybe 2 minutes left, so maybe you can squeeze in one. The recent attempt to do a PR thing called Shout Your Abortion. I mean, how many women have you met who really wanted to shout about their abortion? I mean, who really wanted to publicize it, who thought it was an absolutely great thing, even if they still supported the idea of allowing women to choose that option? How many of them were of the Shout Your Abortion sort of mindset?
Well, I find that very sad. Yes, you're right. Most women would prefer no one knew about it. They would prefer to bury it so deep in their heart that they never think about it. That's right. How most women respond to their abortion. I think these poor women that have been brainwashed by the Shout Your Abortion ideology. I think probably they're doubling down, because how else can they justify what they did? So we should be praying for them, because they need a change of heart, clearly. But most women are not there. Most women don't want anyone to know about it.
Well, our Morning Air host, John Morales' wife, Cindy, created a Shout Your Story thread, and the pro-life version of the Shout My Abortion thing. I think that's on YouTube, so people can look that up. Dr. Ingrid Skop, we've got maybe 30 seconds left. Tell us a little bit more about what you do and where people can find you.
Well, I love women. I love delivering babies. I'm still working semi-part-time delivering babies, as well as my work with Charlotte Lozier. But if you want to find good resources and education, LozierInstitute.org has got a ton of papers that'll help you to dig into some of these details a little bit more. And, you know, just be aware that women and their unborn children are not enemies. God created them to be compatible and to benefit each other.
Dr. Ingrid Skop, God bless you. Thank you very much for joining us. Coming up next, Hale Clark. I'm Ed Morrissey. Thank you very much for listening.